he's sitting. I find my wife a seat there. Well, thank you for the opportunity. It's been great to be in with you this weekend. And I've survived. Hopefully you've survived. And it's a good treat for me. You know, being a psychologist, I met some interesting people. He was my 9 o'clock appointment. Came in, sat down. I say, what psychologist say? I said, how can I help you? He says, you can't help me. I'm crazy. I said, oh. I said, why you think that? He said, I've been to psychiatrists. They say I'm crazy. I said, well, what are you doing right now? He said, I'm seeing this psychiatrist in North Dallas. I said, what is he telling you to do? Let me just help you here. If you ever want to be a psychologist and make money at it, always find out what people are doing right now and don't advise that, because they wouldn't be seeing you if it was working. You know, so I'll find out what they're doing and then tell them to do something else. So I said, what's he telling you to do? He said, he's telling me not to do anything. I'm crazy. I can't be helped. I said, well, tell me your story. He starts to tell me his story. He's got a pretty good story as stories go. But I've heard every story that ever existed. That's all I've done most of my life. Listen to people's stories. Matter of fact, one of my great fears is just before I die, somebody else's life's going to flash before me instead of my own. Because I spent all my time listening to their stories. I was doing what psychologists do. I was leaning forward. I was making eye contact. I was saying, I can understand how you feel that way. I mean, I thought I was doing good. About 20 minutes into the conversation, he gets up and starts to walk out. He said, I'm leaving. You're totally incompetent. I heard you were the best. You're the worst. I'm leaving. And he starts to leave. I said, whoa, you call me incompetent. At least you could tell me why. He said, sir, it would have been obvious to anybody, much less a psychologist, a so-called trained observer of human behavior. It would be obvious to anybody. I have on two watches. They're identical watches. They've never been over a second apart. I bought them the same time, the same place. I raised that arm so you could see that watch. I raised this arm so you could see that watch. You never noticed. You never brought it up. You don't know. I said, whoa, wait a minute. I said, you call me incompetent? You know, you're leaving, you know? At least you could do one thing for me. He said, what? I took my notepad. I always take notepads when people write. I took my notepad. I handed it to him. I said, take this notepad. I want you to read what's on top of this notepad in big, bold letters. I hand him a notepad. He looks at it. He starts to smile. I said, I want you to read it out loud. He read these words out loud. This man has on two watches. Said, you noticed, didn't you? I said, not only did I notice, I know why you wear two watches. He got excited. He started to get big. He started to talk really fast. Well, why do I wear two watches? I said, because you're crazy. You told me that when you first came in here. He sat down. We had a nice little chat after that. So I really just told him that to get his attention. And I told you that to get your attention. But I did promise you I was going to do something for you. And so we're going to do that the last session today. I'm going to teach men how to listen. Right up there with the great C, a miracle service we're going to have right here. Men and women are different. Men grow up learning how to compete. King of the hill, capture the flag, put a helmet on, seriously injure the other guy. That's how we grew up. Women grew up cooperating. Learning how to cooperate, learning how to talk, learning how to communicate, saying things like, let's braid hair, go over to your house and talk. Boys didn't do that. Well, if they said that, you didn't go. Boys grow up doing things, activities. 40% of what little boys say at 4 years of age is totally unintelligible. Girls, 100% of what they say at 4 years of age, they're already talking, already communicating. Boys, 4 years of age, 40% unintelligible. Sounds, grunts, groans. You don't believe it? Tomorrow morning, go to the 4-year-old boy's class and just watch. You'll hear boom, 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 bomb, 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 bomb. Just a bunch of noises. Well, matter of fact, men never outgrow their need to make their noises, do they? And so you got little boys growing up differently than little girls. Boys competing, always. We got married. Penny said, can we stop at that rest area? I said, not till I pass that Chevrolet. What Chevrolet? Chevrolet passed me 30 miles back. I've been trying to catch ever since. That Chevrolet. That's how we grew up, you see, trying to compete. That's why, you know, you asked a man what happened at work, he gets all defensive thinking you're competing, find out something bad about him. See? So we grow up differently. So women talk more for rapport than report. They talk more nonverbally than verbally. They see the feelings behind the facts. So it's a different way of communicating. So we're going to try to teach you how to enter that world, guys. All right? So here's the key. L-I-S-T-E-N. We're going to go through each letter. L stands for lean forward, look them in the eye. Okay? A man thinks he can listen with a computer going, with a phone going, or with, you know, whatever's happening, you know. And a woman is getting frustrated over there because you got to put everything down, guys. You got to lean forward, look them in the eye. Why? Because you got to learn to pick up on the nonverbal communication. If you come home and your wife's in a position somewhat like this, and you say, "What's wrong, honey?" And she says, "Nothing." And you say, "Oh, good, I'm going to go play golf." You will soon see Jesus, because she's going to kill you. Why? Because nonverbally, she's telling you everything is wrong. And if you love me enough, you would talk to me and we would figure out what it is. See, nonverbal communication. Women also understand intuitively, sometimes they don't know exactly what is wrong. But there's something wrong here. We need to talk enough about it that we figure out what it is. Lean forward. I stands for inquire. That means you're active listening. And by the way, these same principles apply everywhere. It's why women are so much better in the business world and things that need communication than men are, you know, because they're very good at it. The men who are good at this, though, you'll find out you'll do much better in the real world too, because listening to people is how you find out what their needs are, what their one great example of that, one thing we do a lot of is the Myers-Briggs personality inventory. We do with church staffs and couples and all kinds of things because it has so much research on it. I was doing the Myers-Briggs for a company, and they had about four vice presidents, and the president wanted me to evaluate each vice president's strengths and weaknesses, how he handled stress and these kind of things. And we're talking about this one vice president. We went through all the strengths and weaknesses, and finally I said this. And by the way, this year, instead of giving him that bonus that you give him every year, give him an extra week's vacation. That will motivate him a lot more than a bonus. And he stops and he turns and he looks at me and says, "You can tell that from a psychological test?" I said, "No, I asked him." And then I went on to explain, you know, this guy's got two girls. One graduated from high school this year. One's graduating from college this year. The one graduating from college is getting married. And he knows it's probably the last year they'll have a family vacation, all of them together. And he wants to go to Europe. He wants it to be a big deal. And he needs an extra week's vacation. You see, that's the only way I found out that was to communicate and listen and talk to him. See? So inquire is active listening. Inquire is able to respond to what the person said. For example, "Well, then what happened?" Or, "Why did she say that?" Or, you know, just something that lets her know that you actually listened, all right? Now, I know, because I work with a lot of guys, some of you guys are pretty low down on the listening pole, okay? So let me just give you those first two steps. If you could put this into operation, this may be helpful for you. Just lean forward, look her in the eye, and when she says something, say, tell me more. I mean, it's pretty basic. You can do that. You know, just put everything down, lean forward. When she pauses, tell me more. Now, I have to tell the women this, and I really hate to do it, but I have to tell you the truth. And the truth is, when your husband leans forward, looks you in the eye, and says, tell me more, he doesn't really want to know anymore. I gotta tell you, that's sad. It's sad. But I gotta tell you, that's the truth, okay? Because he's a guy. He's a guy. Okay, so when he does that, leans forward, he's doing it because he loves you, he loves Jesus, and I told him to. So when he does that, keep it short. Okay, keep it short. He does not want the whole newspaper. He wants the headline. You see, he doesn't want a book. He wants a pamphlet. You know, the guy said, does it bother you that your wife has the last word? He says, no, I'm just excited when she gets to it. So keep it short. Keep it short. So, lean forward, inquire, stop interrupting. Tell them what they said and how they look, because nonverbal is important, and then ask them if you're correct. Assumption is the lowest form of knowledge. I used to teach a class in communication at a college, and the test on communication, the first question was always, blank is the lowest form of knowledge. I'd want those college students to be able to write, assumption is the lowest form of knowledge. Had a football player in my class who wrote, my brain is the lowest form of knowledge. And I gave him credit. It's not the things we don't know. It's the things we think we know that aren't so. And by the way, the longer you're married, probably the worse listener you become. Because now you think you know that anyway, you see. So you don't have to listen the way you used to listen. But people change. People grow. And so your mate will surprise you that, hey, I would like to do that. I think I'd like to do that. You know, and you have to talk about that. Penny and I are right now at the state of life where we're trying to decide, what do we like to do? I mean, do we really want to go on a trip? You know, we're coming up to one of those big anniversaries. Do we want to go to Europe? You know, or do we really want to just stay in America? What? You got to talk and come out with all that. And you'll change. And what you thought you liked when you were in your 30s, you may not want to do when you're in your 60s. So, yeah. So lean forward, inquire, stop interrupting, tell them what they said, and ask them how they look. Let me give you some visuals so you can understand that. You come home from work, and you say to your wife, "Let's go get a steak," and your wife kind of yawns. Well, that's a good idea. And then she starts looking in a magazine. Now, most men at that point will just get mad on the inside. You know, they'll just start talking to themselves. And by the way, the most important conversation is the one that you have with yourself. So inside voice, he starts talking to himself. She don't want to go. I can tell she doesn't want to go. She never wants to get a steak. You know, she wants to eat quiche or salad or something like that, or this green stuff and all that kind of. I need a steak every now and then. You know, he's just, you know, just building it up. You know, 15 minutes later, then she says, "I thought we're going to get a steak." Well, by now he's gone from logical to psycho, right? You know, because you know. Well, we were, but you didn't want to go. You didn't. Well, I didn't want to go. I said I wanted to go. No, you said it, but you didn't. You know, and it's psycho. You know, but if when he comes home, he says, would you like to go get a steak? And you yawn and say, and by the way, remember what the answer is. Great idea. You know, if you just started that way, it'd be easy. But you know, but he could say, honey, I asked you to, if you wanted to go get a steak, and you said yes, but then you yawned and you looked tired and you acted like you didn't want to go. Okay, nonverbal. You acted like you didn't want to go. So you say, this is what I heard, but this is what I see. Am I right? Okay. And then she could say, oh, I am tired. Man, it's been a long day. But, man, protein's exactly what I need. Steak sounds wonderful. Great idea. And you'd be eating steak, you see, instead of going psycho at home talking about, you know, what happened. You say you, another visual. You buy your dream house, you know, and, you know, you pay $400,000 for your dream house, and you're in it like a month. And the wife says this, this pantry sure is inconvenient. Well, a man hears that. He starts going psycho. You know, what does she mean that kitchen's inconvenient? It's a $400,000 inconvenient kitchen. You have to, you know, now she wants to get another house. We have to pay another real estate person, you know, another $50,000 to get this. You know, he just starts going psycho. Or he could say, honey, you said this kitchen is inconvenient. Does that mean you don't like this house anymore? Oh, no, honey, I love this house. This is our dream house. This is perfect. But remember the pantry at our other house? Remember it had four shelves right here? Man, if we could just have four shelves right here, that would be great. You see how four shelves cost $99? You see, you can save $49,900 if you just listen and communicate, you see. Don't make those assumptions. Lean forward. Inquire. Stop interrupting. Tell them what they said and ask them if it's true. And remember the word I taught you last night, when. What happened, inside how I felt, next time do this. You have to get out your expectations. People don't know, especially as you're aging, they don't know many times that your expectations have changed. I had this couple in Dallas. They were, I think she had three preschool kids. She was exhausted, and she always would announce that the husband's home from work. There's a glass where she could see the car coming home. So whenever the car passed, she'd say, Daddy's home. And the preschool kids would run to the front door. Now, this guy, I found out later because they came in for counseling. This guy was in commercial real estate in Dallas. And this was in the late 80s. And he wore $5,000 suits. They had real people's names in them. You know what I mean? Not dry clean only, real people's name. Not J.C. Penney name either, real people's name. And he would come home from work, and these kids would jump on him. And you know what preschool kids carry around? It's pretty gross. They'd get stuff on him, and he'd get mad and throw one kid, another kid, jump on him, get stuff in there. And he'd get mad at his wife, and every afternoon was psycho. So they come to see the psychologist. So I always break couples up when I first see them because I've just been in lots of fights and I don't do psycho well. So I told the wife, I want to hear talk to you first, then I'll talk to your husband. So I asked the husband, what are your expectations? I mean, I asked the wife. I'm much better than this without medication, I promise. I asked the wife, what are your expectations when your husband comes home from work? Remember, that's something that's you can start to pre-look at these things. That's when it's logical, before he comes home. See, that's what the key is here. What are your expectations when your husband comes home from work? Oh, I need help with these kids. I'm so exhausted. Man, but he gets mad every time, and it just gets, and she started describing that, and it's not pretty. And I said, okay, so you just need help with these kids. And I said, yeah, just a little bit of help. I said, okay, so I bring the husband in. I said, what are your expectations when you come home from work? He said, look, I know she needs help with these kids. And that's when he described what his suit was and how much it cost. And he said, look, if she could just give me 15 minutes, not announce that I'm coming home, that I could go behind the house, come in the back door, get off my suit, put on something like a rubber suit that I could hose down, I would love to help her with these kids. I said, have you ever told her that? Well, no, we just ended up fighting about it. I said, I'm going to bring her back in. I want you to lean forward, look her in the eye, and tell her exactly what you told me. So she comes in. He leans forward. He goes through the whole thing. You know, if you'll just give me 15 minutes, let me get my suit. Let me get on a rubber suit. I mean, he goes through the whole thing. You know, she's nodding and smiling and says, honey, if I know you're going to help me, I'll give you 30 minutes. You know, if I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, I'll give you 30 minutes. We literally solved their problem in 35 minutes. Now, I charged them for the full hour because, I mean, if you're good, get the money, right? You know, that's what I say. Why? Because they decided to work it out, you see. That's what you have to do. So lean forward, inquire, stop interrupting, tell them what they said, ask them if you're right. And E stands for two words. The first E is express comfort. If you are in this thing called marriage for the long term, you're going to have to learn to comfort each other. Bad things are going to happen in this world. It's a fallen world, and eventually the world itself is going to fall. If you had ever told me when Penny and I got married that we would lose a grandson, I don't know if I would be able to cope with that, I would say. If you told me that we'd have a granddaughter that would have a stroke at 18 months, I don't know if I can handle that. So events are going to happen, and together you're going to have to learn to get through those events. One way is to learn how to get comforted yourself, to be able to go away, have places that you've gone for years that give you comfort. It's usually a place like the mountains because the mountains are big and it makes your problems seem a little less big. The ocean is so big, it lets your problems seem not quite so big. If there's a God that could create all this, then it eventually going to be okay. That's why those places are good to go to comfort. Comfort is also being able to do practical things when things aren't going well. You know, we had a lot of Christians don't know how to give comfort. They want to give platitudes instead of doing something practical. They're like Job's friends. Remember Job's friends? I mean, they came with their theological revolvers in their pockets and they shot him to death, basically. You want to do something practical. And by the way, a trace of grace is always better than a truckload of guilt because you don't know why things happen in this world. When we lost my grandson, we had a lady that said, I'll come to your house for 2 weeks, answer the phone, and repeat what happened. I know you want to repeat that story over and over again. I'll tell them what happened, and I'll do that for 2 weeks. From 9 to 5, and I'll take their names and messages so you can get back with them when you're ready to do that. Well, that was such a comfort, you know, to do something practical like that. And that's what you may have to do for your mate at times. You may have to do something practical to help them get through difficult times. The other E is encouragement. Remember I told you success in life is pretty much like driving down the wrong side of the road, learning how to do that. And having somebody in the car to encourage you makes all the difference in the world. So learn to encourage each other. Well, let me ask you, how many of you get too much encouragement? I mean, you are sick of it. You get so much of it. People encouraging you all the time, telling you how wonderful you are, how fantastic you are. Your kids carry around pictures of you in their wallet. These are my parents. I love my parents. Oh, your kids don't carry around pictures of you, huh? Mine don't either. Matter of fact, you get so sick of encouragement, you try to get away from it. You get in a car and drive off, and a policeman pulls you over and says, man, I just want to encourage you today. Let me give you some money for driving so good. Here's lots of money. Not the way life is. Life's very discouraging. So find ways of encouragement. The reason people flock to be around Jesus, think about it. The worst sinners wanted to be around Jesus. Why? He was such an encourager. Even a lady caught in the very act of adultery, the worst thing you could ever do, Jesus encouraged her and said, neither I condemn you, go and sin no more. I think that lady's life totally changed just from that one word of encouragement. Learn to encourage people. It's within us. It's all of us need it. We need to be noticed. Remember when you took your kids to Six Flags or someplace that had that carousel and you tried to go get a Diet Coke or something and you have to wave, you know, I'll be right. No, they're coming around again. No, I see them, but I need a Diet Coke. Yeah, they're coming around again. Oh, okay. You know, you can't ever leave. I mean, you got to wave every time they come around. You know? And that's in all of us. It's in all of us. Encourage, express comfort. And N, L-I-S-T-E-N. N stands for never look at your watch, guys, while your wife is talking. Now, because men are fidgeters, because talking makes them nervous, they didn't grow up learning how to communicate. When you say to a man, let's talk, that's pretty much like leprosy, root canals, IRS audits. He's not looking forward to that, you see. So let me give you some help here. Men talk better through activities because it's stressing them out to talk. Activities will reduce their stress. For example, I'm a golfer. Now, when I play golf, the golf swing only lasts 2 seconds, all right? You just do this and you do that and it's over, 2 seconds. So even if you hit it 100 times, you only hit it like 200 seconds. You're out there 4.5 hours. Well, what did you do? Well, that's how men talk. We fidget talk. Fidget, fidget, talk. Fidget, talk, fidget, 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 talk, talk, fidget, fidget, talk, fidget, fidget, talk, fidget, talk, talk, fidget. That's how we do it. Women can talk, 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 talk. Makes us nervous, 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 nervous. So find a legitimate fidget. Let me give you one. Learn to take walks together. Walking is a legitimate physical activity. It'll help to reduce the stress in a man so he can be able to communicate better. It will also help you get more agreement because the mind and the body are connected, and the longer you're walking in the same direction, the more agreement that you will have. Matter of fact, it's almost impossible to walk in the same direction and disagree. Watch people do it. They will literally stop and turn toward each other when they start to disagree. It's almost impossible to walk in the same direction and disagree at the same time. So learn to take walks together. Men, what you have to understand is to a woman, her primary need is partnership. She wants to know that she's in partnership with you and that you think about her first. It's not before God, but it's right after God. It's before anything else. And whatever else she thinks is there, she will fight you over. If it's the church, if it's golf, if it's whatever, that's where the resentment will start to build. Intimacy to a woman means into me you see. She wants to look into you, and she wants to hear why she's number one, and she wants to hear what you think is important about life. So you have to work at that. You have to work at including her into your world, and that's not natural for a man. You have to think about the details of your world because she's interested in that. Men don't think that way. I used to come home from work, and Penny would say, what happened at work? And I'd say, nothing. And she'd say, they pay you pretty good for nothing, boy. You know. And so one day, I was pretty excited because I was working at First Baptist Dallas, and lady in the music department, Laura, had her baby. So my secretary, just as I was leaving, said, make sure you tell Penny Laura had her baby today. Man, I was pretty excited. Man, I got news today. Was she going to say what happened at work? I got an answer. You know, so came home. What happened at work today? Oh, man, it's a great day. And guess what happened? Laura had her baby. Isn't that great? She said, that's great. What'd you have? Well, she had a baby, honey. I told you. See, women don't think that way. They think details of. So I go back and say, well, what'd you have? And I forgot, you know, what you had. She had a boy. I said, that's great, man. I was pretty excited again. Came home. Guess what, honey? She had a boy. Wasn't that great? She says, isn't that great? What'd they name it? Well, they named it a boy name, honey. I don't know. So go back the next day, you know. What'd they name it? William, going to call it Billy. I was pretty excited about myself. I mean, that's a detail. I checked them. Yeah. I came home. Guess what, honey? I checked. They're going to name him William. I'm going to call him Billy. Isn't that great? She said, that's great. How much little Billy weigh? I said, he's a fat baby, honey. He's a fat baby. That's how women think, you see. That's their world. And by the way, they don't want answers. I left that out. I am on medication. L-I-S. S stands for stop interrupting. How did I miss S? But wow. Men think they can stop the conversation and get back to whatever they're doing if they can just come up with an answer. You know, so they just jump right in there and say, no, just try this. And try. I used to come home from work and Penny and say, Brianne did this, Angela did this, Casey did this. I said, well, do this. Angela do this, Kate do this. We'll do that. And she'd do that. And she'd say, why don't you shut up? You know, she's walking off. And I'm saying, hey, lady, they pay good money for this downtown. This is good answers, you know. But she didn't want my answers. There's no answers for kids, you know. She wanted my assurance that she was home with kids all day long. And that was the most important job to me in the world. And it was. People I was looking at my, I don't even know who they are downtown in my practice. You know, but these are my girls, see. But she wanted that assurance that what she was doing was more important, see. She didn't want a solution. She wanted some sympathy. This is hard work being with kids all day long, see. She didn't want my mouth. She wanted my shoulder, you see. So women don't want your answers, guys. They want your assurance that they're important, that they're number one. That's what they're looking for when they ask those questions. And by the way, just as a balance there, women interrupt men, but for a totally different reason. Because men are men, they never have the details of anything right, you know, because they're men, you know. And so, women, I got some great advice for you. Let it go, okay? It's nothing worse than a man trying to tell a story in public. You know, we were at McDonald's, and the wife will say, it was Wendy's. Well, it was a hamburger joint. Who cares? You know, and it was Wednesday, and she'll say, it was Tuesday. Well, it's a day of the week. I don't care what day it was, you know. And we were with the Jones and the McCullochs, and she'll say, it was the Joneses and the Smiths. And who cares? The story's about the Joneses. Nobody cares who they hang around with, you know. But and then finally he'll just say, forget it. You tell it. Yep. Let me tell you, women, about the men, the brain. Remember I told you he had half a brain when he listens? He's pretty much got half a brain when it comes to relationships and remembering stuff. He's a man. He just makes up stuff. And other men know he's making it up. It's man talk. It's what we do. You know, it's just man talk. Let it go. You know, it's not lying. It's man talk. You know, you're not going to get to heaven and St. Peter say, you let your man lie, you got to go to hell. It's not going to work like that. You know, let it go. It's not that important. And he's not trying to do it. It's the best he can do. All right? The best he can do. Okay, let me see if I can wrap this up. Taught you a lot of stuff. Most of it you can't do. Here's what happens. When you decide that your purpose in life is to bless your wife and your husband or your kids and decide to be God's instrument in this world through the Abraham covenant, you're going to bless people and God's going to bless you. Then you form a partnership with God himself. My wife is a cultured lady. She's always tried to culture me up. And she used to actually take ballet when she was in high school. I've never understood ballet. I actually asked her, why didn't they get taller men and women? And they wouldn't have to stand on their tiptoes. Everybody could relax, have a lot more fun. But I did read a story out of the world of ballet. The New York City Ballet, somebody gave them $1 gazillion. And they gave them $1 gazillion to bring Baryshnikov, the master, to come and dance at the New York City Ballet. And he agreed to do it. I mean, $1 gazillion, I guess I'd do it too. And he came and he said, I'm not going to dance an individual recital, but I'm going to be here for 2 weeks and I'm going to pick somebody locally and then I'm going to work with them and then we will dance a recital together. And so he picked a lady out of the New York City Ballet. Her name was Gelby Kirkland. And the guy writing the article said, I thought it was the worst choice he could have made. I've been watching this lady for years and she's maybe average. Says she has no really strong dance moves. She has no real personality. She definitely wouldn't have what we'd call charisma. I thought, what a bad choice. But it's my job, and so I write about these things. So 2 weeks later, I was on the front row when they came out to dance at the New York City Ballet. When they walked out on the stage, I took a double take, and I thought, he must have heard me or something, because that's not her. He made a different choice. But then I looked really closely and I said, well, it maybe it is. So I looked on the program and it was her, but it didn't look like her. And then they started to dance. And he said, it was unbelievable. I've never seen those dance moves. I've never seen that confidence. I've never seen any personality like that. I was even watching somebody with what I would call charisma. And then it hit me. And the phrase that got me was this. He said, I was blown away by the transformation that occurred in that lady's life when she was partnered with the master. My friend, the Christian life is very simple. You partner with Jesus Christ himself to dance this thing we called life. And I promise you, if you let him lead, you will be blown away by the transformation that will occur. God bless you.